What are we reading? Yes. You know? How do you know? No. Why not? Do you know what we're reading? Okay, I thought you had raised your hand. I was wondering how you knew, because this is the first time you are here. Prabhu. Yes. Now, what do we learn from Paranjana? What's the general idea of what is going on in Paranjana, Madan? The living entity encased in the body, with a bodily concept and. Yes, because the material intelligence, it facilitates the enjoyment of the living entity through the senses. Therefore, when the creation takes place, which mode of material nature combined with false ego does material intelligence come from?
Passion.
This is why. Because often devotees ask, one would think that it would be created by goodness and the mind would be created by passion. But this is why. Because material intelligence's business is to scheme how to enjoy the material world. Now, why is this presented in the Bhagavatam? What it is going to do, what Narada Muni is doing by presenting this story, this allegory to King Paranjana, to King Prichini Barishad, he's going to expose the material concept of life, which is based on the concept that I wish to enjoy. The living entity in the material nature, bhunkte prakriti janiya, and then karanam guna sangasya, that combines him with the modes of material nature, and the result is birth and death, continuously. Sarasa, joni, janmasu. So why is Narada Muni speaking like this? Because Prichini Barishad is making his plan how to enjoy in this world, being instructed by priests. His holy priests, advisors, are giving him a very pious way of enjoyment through performance of sacrifice. But Narada Muni's hope is to rip apart this tendency towards enjoyment, either in a pious way or an impious way, to rip that apart. Why? Why does he wish to rip that apart? That tendency of Prichini Barishad and of every living entity within the material world. But what is the point that he wishes to impress upon his consciousness very, very deeply? Prithu Maharaj heard the same truth from Sanat Kumar. Here it is in one form of or two verses that Sanat Kumar spoke. Very strong words. There is no stronger obstruction. What does obstruction mean? What? Hurdle, yes. What else does obstruction? Impediment, yes. Obstacle, all good. Nothing will get in the way of one's actual self-interest, which means one's spiritual life. There is no stronger obstruction or obstacle to one's self-interest, which means, yes, which means, what does self-realization mean? What is it? What are the two words? Self-realization. What does that mean? We use the term self-realization, but what does it mean? Yes, the self realizes his actual identity. Not just theoretically, but realizes his actual identity. And what is the actual identity of the self, the soul, the Atma? One can say that it's we are Brahman, Tattvamasi, etc., Aham Brahmasmi. We are souls, which is true, but that is an incomplete understanding of who we are. Who we are is what you all said, Jivera Sarupoi Krishner Nitya Das. We are Krishnas. So there is no stronger obstacle or obstruction to one's self-interest or one's understanding his relationship with Krishna than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. In other words, thinking other things, such as all the things that Paranjana is going to be thinking that are pleasing, other than our relationship, uncovering our relationship with Krishna. This is the greatest obstruction, thinking things other than our relationship with Krishna are pleasing. This is what Sanat Kumar said. And second text, this is 32 and 33 in chapter 22. For human society, because these instructions, of course, are meant for human beings. Constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interest. So self-interest and the destruction of one's self-interest. So here, those obstructions are clearly mentioned, some basic ones. How to earn money for sense gratification. People practice dharma or religiosity to get artha, wealth, for kama, sense gratification. This is a great obstacle, the greatest obstacles, because sense gratification binds us in the material world. And until we understand that those desires born of passion, ignorance especially, are traps that cause us incredible pain. Until we deeply understand this, it is very difficult to advance steadily and strongly in Krishna consciousness. And ultimately, as the text of Sanat Kumar explains, when one becomes devoid of knowledge, spiritual knowledge, and tries to enjoy his life in this way, knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones, which are not known for their high intellectual ability. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is strongly presenting these points very mercifully. Sukadev Goswami is speaking, Vyasadeva is speaking, Prabhupada is speaking, very mercifully to try to break through the coverings over our consciousness, which are very attached to our material plan making. Because as long as these coverings are there, it is very difficult for we will cultivate material desires, and the soul's actual self-interest does not grow. So the allegory has been presented, the beginning of it, and Paranjana has seen a very beautiful young lady. He's attracted to her. She's attracted to him. And he's flattered her, spoken very sweet words to capture her attention, because everyone likes when someone speaks very sweetly about ourselves. We like this, you're so good at this, you're so wonderful at that. And then the heart melts, and one can easily, in fact, be manipulated by the flatterer. So, in text 30, oh, beautiful, I ask you to be merciful to me. Text 31, my dear girl, with your face is so beautiful. With your nice eyebrows and eyes and your bluish hair scattered about. Bluish means very blackish. In addition, very sweet sounds are coming from your mouth. Nonetheless, you are so covered with shyness that you do not see me face to face. I therefore request you, my dear girl, to smile and kindly raise your head to see me. Because the more a girl acts shy, the more the man is attracted. The man wants to be attracted, the woman wants to attract the man, and thus material life is the hard knot, riddhaya granta pi, it is tied very tightly. Because this is material consciousness, the central factor of material consciousness is I am the enjoyer, I am the center of existence. This is what false ego tells us, that I am the center, not Krishna is the center. And therefore the cure for self-centered activities is surrendered, Krishna-centered activities. That's where bhakti begins. So this is Ishwaraham. I am the controller. Aham bogi. This is actually it's demonic mentality because it pushes Krishna from the center. But no one sees it like that in the material world. Everyone naturally sees it as romantic, as very sweet, how wonderful. But because it ultimately ends in death and rebirth, as trees and stones, such covered living entities, therefore it is condemned as not being actually for our self-interest. So Prabhupada's purport, we'll read just the beginning of it. Such a speech is typical of a living entity attracted by the opposite sex. This is called, and Prabhupada doesn't use the word romance, what word does he use? This is called bewilderment. Occasioned by becoming conditioned by material nature. But when thus attracted by the beauty of the material energy, one becomes eager to enjoy. So Maya actually covers the intelligence, covers the mind. Illusion forces us to see things inaccurately and see beauty where there is no beauty. One sannyasi, he had on his computer this very short video clip. And maybe it was about a minute. And it's this person you see walking down the street, long hair and sort of wiggling. And the camera is following that person walking down the street. And you could see that the purpose is, oh, and you're seeing the person's back. And then the shoulder, something falls off the shoulder a little bit, and the shoulder is revealed. And people's imaginations are starting to imagine what this person looks like. She's so beautiful. Beautiful long hair. And then she stops at a traffic light and turns around, and it's a man with a mustache and glasses and funny teeth and everything. And then you feel so stupid because fooled, trapped, bewildered, confused, cheated by the material energy again. How many times How many times? Because the mind is so, it constructs these illusions of beauty where actually there's no beauty. This is Maya's business, to fool, to cheat, to illusion the living entity. And there is no way out of this. This is the material mind constructing a false reality based on the tendency to enjoy, thinking that I will enjoy. Ishwaraham aham bhogi siddham balavan sukhi. So only one is attracted by the glitter of the material energy. It is not, there is no pleasure in the object. And until we become deeply convinced about this, our minds will always be chasing the glitter of the material world, the illusory glitter. And Prabhupada continues to say, or he said, when thus attracted by the beauty of the material energy, one becomes very eager to enjoy. This is elaborately described in this instance of Paranjan as becoming attracted by the beautiful woman. In conditioned life, the living entity is attracted by a face, eyebrows or eyes, a voice or anything. This used to happen all the time with the kirtan party, that with the 24-hour kirtan, that Matajis would be fall in love with somebody's voice. One of the singer's voice. And we can laugh, but this is why it is said that brahmachari shouldn't listen to a woman singing, for that reason, because there's a tendency. These tendencies, Maya, born of Maya, the tendency to enjoy is so strong in the material world. We should not challenge it. We should respect it. In short, everything becomes attractive to a person who has that mood. When a man or a woman is attracted by the opposite sex, it doesn't matter whether the opposite sex is beautiful or not. Everything looks beautiful in illusion. So this is the business of this section of the Bhagavatam. It is not the... it is not a wonderful leela in one sense, although it's quite a captivating story. But it is meant specifically to crack the illusion that it is possible that I can somehow enjoy in this world, because those are the obstructions that stop us from taking seriously spiritual life. Narada continued. When Paranjana became so attracted and impatient to touch the girl and enjoy her, the girl also became attracted by his words and accepted his request by smiling. So she was very shy, and then she was like this. And then she looked up and gave him a smile, and when the woman smiles at the man in that way, oh, his heart melts. She is mine. He is mine. Oh, I will love you forever. But actually, the forever love is meant for Krishna. Krishna and Krishna's parika, Krishna's associates. Because in the material world, those attachments, material attachment brings illusion, and what attachment and envy go together, as we heard yesterday, and they cause so much pain. We try so hard to get pleasure, but what results is frustration and pain. This is for non-devotees. And if we have a little tinge of non-devotee in us, it is for that part too. We should not think. Actually, it is meant for devotees to clean the heart. Cheto darpanam arjanam. By this incident, Prabhupada says in his purport, we can understand that when a man is aggressive and begins to woo a woman, the woman becomes attracted to the man. This process is described in the Bhagavatam as Pumsha Striya Matuni Bhava Maitan. This attraction is enacted on the platform of sexual life. Thus, the sex impulse is the platform of material engagement. This conditional life, the platform of material sense enjoyment, is the cause of forgetfulness of spiritual life, and for that reason it is condemned. In this way, a living entity's original Krishna consciousness becomes covered or converted into material consciousness. Thus, one engages in the business of sense gratification up until the moment of death. That was my own addition, up until the moment of death. The girl now begins her reply. Oh, best of human beings. This is how she's addressing him. I recognize your exalted position and your great intelligence too for falling in love with me. I recognize how qualified you are. Because he had asked her questions about where did you come from, where did your protectors come from, the five-hooded snake, etc. And she replies, because we go back and forth in both the verses, but especially the purports, by speaking about it, the analogy, analyzing it just as material life, and also each of the allegorical points have their meaning. So the woman is material intelligence. So the person, the soul, is questioning his intelligence about what his origin is. And the material intelligence says, I do not know who has begotten me. I cannot speak to you perfectly about this, nor do I know the names or the origin of the associates with me. Where does my life force come from? Where do I come from? Suddenly I'm conscious, I'm aware that I'm here, I exist, but no true understanding of where I come from. Prabhupada's purport. Or how I got this particular body. My body is different from this person's body and different from that person's body. Why am I in this particular body with this characteristic, this type of nose, this type of a hand, this type of a voice? And another person is completely different. Different hair, different this, different that. Why? Who can answer that question? So Prabhupada in his purport says, the living entity is ignorant of his origin, where he comes from. He does not know why this material world was created, why others are working in this material world, and what the ultimate source of this manifestation is. Of course, devotees through their... This is called avidya, or ignorance. So with knowledge, vidya, the avidya is removed. So devotees have this vidya. No one knows the answers to this question, and this is called ignorance. By researching into the origin of life, important scientists are finding some chemical compositions or cellular combinations, but actually no one knows the original source of life within this material world. There are so many scientists who currently think that life on this planet came from spaceships and other planets, even nowadays. They'll think anything, that some spaceship somehow came and landed, or meteors having simple life on it landed and planted life on this planet, because they'll think of any reason other than saying God, the three-letter word, God. Any reason. Which is harder to believe, that some spaceship came and planted some living entities here, or there is a great intelligence behind it, a supreme person? But yet, So many will come to their conclusions and refuse to accept that, first of all, they don't understand, that they can't understand, and that there is some incredible intelligence behind this. And intelligence is a characteristic that persons have. So she continues, O great hero, we only know that we are existing in this place. This is our situation. We do not know what will come after. Indeed, we are so foolish that we do not care to understand who has created this beautiful place for our residence. My dear gentlemen, all these men and women with me are known as my friends. And the snake, who always remains awake, protects this city even during my sleeping hours. So what is the snake? Prana, the life force. So much I know, but I do not know anything beyond this. So little bit of knowledge about one's own situation. And usually, for a materialistic person, it is rare that one will even ask, because one is so involved in family, maintaining family, and working, trying to enjoy. One doesn't ask these questions even. So that means that one's consciousness, the intelligence a human being has, is practically speaking wasted. It is not being used. O killer of the enemy, you have somehow or another come here. This is certainly great fortune for me. I wish all auspicious things for you. You have a great desire to satisfy your senses. So here we should think in terms of the living entity. He has such a desire in this material world to enjoy sense pleasures. And then the material intelligence says, and all my friends and I, my life force, my planning ability, everything, I shall try our best in all respects to fulfill your desires. In other words, for enjoyment. We'll read the first part of Prabhupada's purport. The living entity comes down into this material world for sense gratification, and his intelligence, represented by the woman, gives him the proper direction by which he can satisfy his senses to their best capacity. In actuality, however, intelligence comes from the super soul or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he gives full facility to the living entity who has come down to this material world. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vyavya Satmika Buddhi Ekeha Kurunandana. Budhyo avyasainam. Those who are on the spiritual path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute or bewildered or have material desires is many-branched. When a devotee is advancing towards spiritual realization, his only aim is the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does not care for any other material or spiritual activity. This is a devotee who's progressing. Not bahushaka. Not, what does that mean, bahushaka? Many branches. Shaka means branch. Bahu, many. King Paranjana represents the ordinary living entity, not the devotee, and the woman represents the ordinary living entity's intelligence. Combined, the living entity enjoys his material senses, and the intelligence supplies all paraphernalia for his enjoyment. 37. My dear Lord, she says, I have just arranged the city of 9 gates for you so that you can have all kinds of sense gratification. You may live here for 100 years and everything for your sense gratification will be supplied. How can I expect to unite with others who are neither conversant about sex nor capable of knowing how to enjoy life when living or after death? Such foolish persons are like animals because they do not know the process of sense enjoyment in this life and after death. So everyone combines with another person because there is the promise of sense pleasure, facilitating sense pleasure. And people think that this is life's purpose. No one perhaps consciously thinks life's, except Charvak Muni perhaps, thinks that life's purpose is to enjoy the senses, because I don't think people think so deeply about life's purpose. Eat, sleep, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. This is a materialist reality, but it's too disturbing to speak so bluntly about it. Could this be the only purpose of my life? Just to enjoy for a few years and then the body falls down dead? I've worked so hard to accumulate so many things and then just death of the body, is this life's purpose? No one wants to think about it. This is the situation for most people. So a person who is asking questions about the purpose of life, especially nowadays, is very rare. And generally one has to go through so much suffering before one will ask questions. Is this the purpose of life? I've tried to enjoy, I haven't been successful. Text 39. The woman continued, "In this material world, a householder's life brings all kinds of happiness in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and the begetting of children, sons, and grandsons. After that, one may desire liberation as well as material reputation. The householder can appreciate the results of sacrifices which enable him to gain promotion to superior planetary systems." In other words, she's speaking of very pious methodologies for enjoyment. Not as what was said in one of the texts that we read in the instructions of Sanat Kumar, about hedonistic activities, unrestricted sense enjoyment, trying to get pleasure from that, because that brings simply ignorance and suffering. So this is a pious way to enjoy. This is pravritti marg. Religion's purpose is sense enjoyment. Enjoyment in the present, perform sacrifices, and this is what Prachini Barishat is thinking. Perform sacrifices to gain piety, punya. And with that piety, I'll be elevated to the heavenly planet, Swargalok. Enjoy, 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 enjoy. So what is the result of even this pious attempt? We shall hear in the story of Paranjana. But nowadays, as Kali Yuga progresses, people don't even have so much, so tend to not have such dutiful and restricted non-hedonistic desires. Rather, they are just, their passion turns right to ignorance instead of being sublimated to goodness. And the result is obvious. If anyone goes to any of the cities in the world practically, there is so much material presented for sense gratification, and there is so much suffering. More and more obvious how much suffering there is. So the woman continued, "According to authorities, the householder life is..." So she's promoting householder life for the purpose of enjoyment. That's Grihamedi life. While in spiritual life, devotional service, householder life is explained as a facility to make progress in spiritual life, not towards sense enjoyment. And the process of that is to keep Krishna in the center. that everyone is a servant. No one is an enjoyer. He's speaking to her. Paranjana is speaking to his wife-to-be, promising so many things for her enjoyment. Really, I shall protect you. I will give you security. And she's promising sensual enjoyment for him. We will facilitate all your pleasures. But in devotional life, when there's grihastha life, the premise is that Krishna is the central person for enjoyment. And everyone is a servant of Krishna. This is very, very hard to do in Kali Yuga. Very, very rare that someone will take such an exalted point of view. Text 41. So she's promoting this materialistic or grihamedi household of life, which is pious, but Sanat Kumar has, in one verse, if you remember, he's accepted it as better than hedonistic, unrestricted sense enjoyment, but in the next verse, he rejects it, practically speaking. Prabhupada's purport to text 40. Because this verse speaks about the obligations to one's forefathers and saintly persons, one's country, etc. So this is trying to please them. And if one does not repay them, Prabhupada in his purport says, he's further entangled in the process of birth and death. The grihamedi, however, who is overly addicted to material things does not know that if he simply takes shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda, he is immediately freed from all obligations to others. And if one goes down this path, one cannot act in Krishna consciousness. She continues, "Oh, my dear hero, who in this world will not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten," meaning easily controlled by my promises of sense gratification and my flattering words telling you how powerful you are. And the last few sentences in Prabhupada's purport here are some of the most controversial sentences in all of his purports of the Bhagavatam, so we cannot resist reading them. So many people get angry when they hear this. So let's see how angry we get. In this regard, the word vikyatam is very significant. A man is always famous for his aggression towards a beautiful woman, and such aggression is sometimes considered rape. Although rape is not legally allowed, it is a fact that a woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. This is what Prabhupada says, and so many, especially Matajis, and also so many men, they say, how can we present this in the university? This is completely against the culture of the world that women like people jumping out and raping them from a dark corner, because this is a horrible thing. And it goes on so much in the world. How can we say in a spiritual book that a woman likes a man who is expert at rape? So there's so much talk. Oh, we have to. Maybe we can just take a pair of scissors and cut this out. Now, what does Prabhupada mean by this? I can tell you my understanding of what he means. This is in 41. He means that, as he said before, some seduction, aggressive seduction, but this is actually pleasing to a woman, an expert at that, as opposed to expert. This is on the material level. Not meaning jumping out and grabbing and violently doing something horrible, but expert at some type of seduction. This is attractive. to a woman's mentality. This is my understanding of what Prabhupada is saying. Anyone want to comment on this? Is there anyone outraged? Yes.
Yeah, in some dictionaries, old yeah. dictionaries.
Okay, we'll go on. She continues, O mighty armed, who in this world will not be attracted by your arms? So he's flattered her, and now it's her time to turn to flatter him. Which are just like the bodies of serpents. Actually, you relieve the distress of husbandless women like us by your attractive smile and your aggressive mercy. We think that you are traveling on the surface of the earth just to benefit us only. You are my protector. There's a difference between the mentality of women and mentality of men. Women naturally wish to be under the shelter of some powerful person who will give them protection, and men naturally like to think of themselves as the great powerful protector. So in this way, both the man and the woman try to exploit each other. The great sage Narada continued, My dear king, these two. So again, Narada Muni is trying to shatter the romance of material life. He's trying to break it down into its most crude elements. Again, this is not speaking about the social purpose of marriage, which is really required, but speaking in a specific way so that people don't become overly attached, because that will entangle one continuously in repeated birth and death. And if one gets involved, as Paranjana is going to get involved, in materialistic relationships, the result is a constricting of consciousness, of spiritual consciousness. And the result is that, practically speaking, that there is no hope to gain one's own self-interest, self-realization, realization of oneself as Krishna's eternal servant and living in that relationship. So when we think of human life as having the purpose to awaken our relationship with Krishna, and we think of how sweet and wonderful that is, then these romantic materialistic things will appear to be great impediments when they are seen in a romantic materialistic way. They are great impediments for one's own self-interest. So therefore, Prachini Barhishad is being spoken to very strongly to shatter his romance, his romantic idea of performing sacrifices for the purpose of enjoyment. Continuing, 43. The great sage Narada, so this is the beginning of their honeymoon. Honeymoon, in India, do they have honeymoons when people get married? Yes? For the first 2 weeks, everyone, the newlywed husband and wife just stare at each other and think how, under the stars in their eyes and how wonderful and everything. And then the difficulties start coming out, and the flies start coming around the honey and eating it all, and the ants and everything. So everyone has their plan in the beginning. It's going to be like this, and it's going to be like this, and we're going to become so wealthy, and our biggest problem will be how to figure out how to spend all the money we're going to make, and our children will be perfect, and they will all become so intelligent, they'll be obedient, but yet with a good spirit, and then they'll all never give us any trouble. This is the dreams that go on in every newlywed's mind, practically speaking. And nowadays, because most in the West especially, so many of the children who have grown up with that dream just shattered by their parents divorcing, that they want to try their marriage before they get married. And they almost always, not almost always, but 50%, you have any percentages? Sorry, like, but it's high. They'll want to live with the person. They don't even call, even married people in the West, they don't say, introduce, this is my wife, my husband, this is my partner, they'll say. And whether you're married or not married, they say, this is my partner. And the idea is that we will try living together for a while, and then if it works out, so there won't be any divorce, then we'll get married. But there is no, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So much suffering. Because of the attempt, and we think the suffering is caused by the other person. But the suffering is actually caused by my own mentality of I want to be the enjoyer and the controller. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. This is the cause of the suffering. And then we project that out on the other person. Everything is her fault. Everything is his fault. But everything is my fault in the sense that I have attachment. I'm trying to center the whole world around me as if I'm the center, as if I'm the enjoyer. And I'm not the enjoyer. Krishna is the enjoyer. And Maya will give us all the illusion required to make us think in this foolish way, and we suffer again and again and again until the moment of death where all our illusion is exposed. You have been bluffing your whole life. You are insignificant. The moment of death, the whole illusion that we live in life is exposed. Our life comes right before us. And we're made so foolish and so unhappy when we're forced by Krishna in the form of death to see our life has been wasted. We've accomplished actually nothing. Very heavy. And this is what will happen. But Paranjana is not in that stage yet. He's still on his honeymoon. My dear king, those two, the man and the woman, supporting one another through mutual understanding. Mutual understanding means you make me happy through sense gratification and I will make you happy through sense gratification. They entered that city and they enjoyed life for 100 years. Many professional singers used to sing about the glories of King Paranjana and his glorious activities. When it was too hot in the summer, he used to enter a reservoir of water. He would surround himself with many women and enjoy their company. As Prabhupada says in his purport, in this verse, life in the dream state is described. Of the 9 gates in that city, 7 were on the surface. 2 were subterranean. A total of 9 doors were constructed, and these led to different places. All the gates were used by the city's governor. My dear king, so now the body or the gates are going to be described. Of the 9 doors, 5 led to the eastern side, 1 led to the northern side, 1 led to the southern side, 2 led to the western side. I shall try to give the names of these different doors. The gates, what are the gates? The eyes, nose, etc., ears. These gates are the methodology by which the body interacts, or the internal senses in the mind. Through this, the person can interact with the outside world through the gates, just like in a city. One goes through the gates and goes out into the world beyond the city. So the consciousness interacts with the outside world through the gates. I'm skipping some verses here because they're just naming the different gates. go to text text 54. Of the many inhabitants of the city, there are two persons named Nirvak and Pishakrit. Although King Paranjana was the ruler of citizens who possessed eyes, he unfortunately used to associate with these blind men. Accompanied by them, he used to go here and there and perform various activities. So the arms and legs have no holes, they have no gates, even though they're senses. And although we depend on them, they are blind and need direction. So that is the allegorical point. So he used to associate with the two blind men, meaning the arms and the legs. Sometimes he used to go to his private home with one of his chief servants, the mind, who was named Vishuchina. At that time, illusion, satisfaction, and happiness used to be produced from his wife and children. Illusion, satisfaction, and happiness. We'll read two of the paragraphs in this purport, the first and the third. According to the Vedic conclusion, one's self is situated within the heart. As stated in the Vedic language, Ridyaham Ridyayam Atma Patishtitaha. The self is situated within the heart. In the material condition, however, the spirit soul is covered by the material qualities, namely goodness, passion, and darkness. And within the heart, these three qualities react. For instance, when one is in goodness, he feels happiness. When one is in passion, he feels satisfaction through material enjoyment. So this is all day long. We go through these different emotions of happiness, bewilderment, satisfaction when we do something that we enjoy sensually. So this is not us exactly. This is the modes of material nature interacting with the soul within the heart. This actually has nothing to do with the soul itself. Or rather, he's dreaming this. What was that nice comment you read of, that was by Vishwanath yesterday? That there's an inconceivable connection between the soul and material consciousness. It's sort of not there. It's there really by the arrangement of the Paramatma. He facilitates this. He makes the jump so that the soul can dream in material consciousness, although he is spiritual. He facilitates it, allows it to happen. All these activities are of the mind, and they function on the platform of thinking, feeling, and willing. And the final purport in this purport, everyone who is not in Krishna consciousness must be considered to be an illusion. Everyone who is not awake to his eternal relationship with Krishna is an illusion. One's so-called feelings of happiness and satisfaction resulting from material things are also illusion. Factually, neither society, friendship, love, or anything else can save one from the onslaught of the external energy which is symptomized by birth, death, old age, and disease. To get even one living entity out of the illusory condition is very difficult. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 7:14, Daivyesha. Yes. Being thus entangled in different types of mental concoctions and engaged in fruitive activities. Mental concoctions. I am enjoying when it's just the modes of material nature interacting, and I am asleep actually. And suffering is coming from it. Like a person who's in the hospital with so many needles on him, and he's got his head in bandages and needles and drips, and you walk in and you say, how are you? And he says, oh, I'm okay. such suffering. When one devotee, Sri Radharaman, several years ago, he broke his back. And it was neck, actually. It was very dangerous. And he was in the ward of a hospital where all the patients who had broken their necks were sent in Australian Perth. And by Krishna's arrangement, he recovered 95%. But there was one man who had gotten in a car accident in the bed across from him. Just imagine, he's a married man with two children, and he breaks his neck in a car accident. And he finds out that for the rest of his life, he's probably late 30s, early 40s, something, that he won't be able to move his hands and legs for the remainder of his life. That's called quadriplegic, the English word for that. He can't move them. And then his wife came in and said, this was after a week or two of him being in the hospital, and said, I'm not going to come and see you anymore. It's too much for me. I already have a boyfriend. It's true. Just imagine. He's already has 100 knives in his heart. And she... So, and just imagine, he had probably been married 10, 15 years. Just imagine when they first got married, what they were dreaming and thinking, how they were going to enjoy, and life will be like this, and life will be like that, and our children will be like this, and our house will be like this, and we'll do this and that. Just dreaming. And this was, so we could say that that's the most unfortunate thing that could have happened to that man in one sense. But in another sense, Krishna was so kind that he woke him up from the dream. Because people can stay like that in the dream until the moment of death. And then they have to take a next body of a hog or something like that. So at least Krishna so kindly shook him in a very hard way. Let's say, just see what material life is. Now you should come to me. Give up the dream. Now you can't move your arms and legs, but at least you can, you have consciousness. You can speak. You can pray. You can call out to me for help. Take shelter of spiritual life, of your religion. But usually, when people get hit with something like that, inside they just die. No reason to live. Very heavy. But this is the material world. We say that's heavy, but every person is, every animal, every bird, every bug, every cow, every tree, every blade of grass is going to die. The whole thing is heavy. It's an incredible holocaust. And here we are, forgetting that this is happening, trying to make a comfortable situation for me. That is called illusion, Maya, the energy of Krishna that makes it seem possible that I'm going to be able to do that in the midst of this incredible forest fire, samsara dava nalalila loka of material existence. I told you this is a heavy chapter. It keeps going on like this too. When the queen drank liquor, and then Prabhupada in that purport says that ultimately he's promising her, I will protect you, and she says, oh yes, you are so powerful. Then as time goes on, ultimately because he desires sense enjoyment, he becomes under the control of his queen. He is forced to surrender. So when the queen drank liquor, King Paranjana used to also engage in drinking. When the queen dined, he used to dine with her. When she chewed, King Paranjana also used to chew along with her. When the queen sang, he also sang. Similarly, when the queen cried, he also cried. And when the queen laughed, he also laughed. When the queen talked loosely, he also talked loosely. When the queen walked, the king walked behind her. So the situation has turned around. He is no longer the powerful hero. When the queen would stand still, the king would also stand still. When the queen would lie down in bed, he would also follow and lie down with her. When the queen sat, he would also sit. When the queen heard something, he would follow her to hear the same thing. So in other words, the soul is looking at allegory level. The soul is following all the plans of the material intelligence. When the queen saw something, the king would also look at it. When the queen smelled something, the king would follow her to smell the same thing. When the queen touched, all the senses are being engaged by material intelligence, and the soul is similarly engaged. When the queen touched something, the king would also touch it. And when the dear queen was lamenting, the poor king also had to follow her in lamentation. It's so amazing, if you think about it, that if we have nothing to do with the mind, in fact, all the emotions that we feel, the miseries, the lamentations, they have nothing to do with us. Nothing to do with us. The soul is completely separate. So when the mind is feeling miserable, it's the mind feeling miserable. It's not us. But when this tendency is there to enjoy the mind, and actually described in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this incredible dissociation between the self-realized soul and everything going on in the body. He doesn't identify with it at all. But because of the desire to enjoy that, those things produced by the material energy, then this sambandha relationship develops between the soul and the mind, and through the mind, the body, senses, etc. And then everything that the body and mind experience, the soul has to experience as if it was to him. And therefore there are so many, the impersonalistic processes are mainly centered around, of their sadhana and practices and meditations, are centered around slowing down the mind to break the identification between the mind and the spiritual part of one in their thinking. And it's true, it's there so many places in the Bhagavatam. There is no, it is swapna drashtami bhata. There's no more connection between the soul and the person than us in a dream. The person's lying in bed and he's dreaming that he's flying in the sky. There is no connection. So this continues with the same idea. In the same way, when the queen felt enjoyment, he also enjoyed. When the queen was satisfied, the king also felt satisfaction. So Prabhupada in his purport explains that the mind is the place where the self is situated, and the mind is conducted by the intelligence. The living entity situated within the heart follows the intelligence, identifies with the intelligence. The intelligence is herein depicted as the queen, and the soul, under mental control, follows the material intelligence just as the king follows his wife. The conclusion is that material intelligence is the cause of bondage for the living entity. The point is that one has to take to spiritual intelligence to come out of this entanglement. So where is the spiritual intelligence provided through? Yes, exactly. To the point. So until one assimilates spiritual instruction, one has to neglect one's mind. And then one assimilates it, and then one can act independently based on what he's learned. But it's hard for a conditioned soul to act according to his... Because there's such a tendency to keep this theoretical and not think I have to apply this, that I can't identify with anything other than being Krishna's servant. And that's what initiation actually means. We all have different names that we were given at the time of initiation, but they all have something in common, that we're all servants of Krishna or his devotees. We're all servants of Krishna, and this is what initiation means, to become established as a servant of Guru and Krishna. Old identity as Ishwaraham, Aham Bogi, Siddaham, Balavan Sukhi, broken. New identity, reestablished. Or true old identity, established. I am Krishna's servant. Jeev Krishna Dasi Vishvas Kalo Kale Dugonai. No more misery. But who is so strong to be fully fixed in that? I am Krishna's. And whatever Krishna has given me is his mercy. If one is that strong and doesn't quiver and waver on that, then one is in the spiritual world. Jivatiyo mukti pale sadayabak. In the life of Ambarish Maharaj, the point is one has to take the spiritual intelligence to come out of this entanglement. In the life of Ambarish Maharaj, we find that the great Maharaj first engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. In this way, his intelligence became purified. So, manmana bhava madbhakto, first thing, think of me, become my devotee. So in this way, Ambarish Maharaj engaged fully in Krishna's service, all his senses in Krishna's service. And then the final text here in this chapter, 62. In this way, King Paranjana was captivated by his nice wife and was thus cheated. In what sense was he cheated? He was enjoying. In what sense was he cheated? Yes, but how is that cheating? Yes, that's it's cheated, and that's it's tricked. Yeah, and then he's going to get very disappointed when his body dies and he's fully identified with the body and he's going to experience the pain and misery of death. That is quite a disappointment. Again, because everything one has accumulated in this life based on the body, mind, intelligence, gone, turns to nothing, ashes, dust. He was captivated by his nice wife and thus cheated. Indeed, he became cheated in his whole existence in the material world. He thought, as Vanamali Gopabhu said, he thought he was the enjoyer and he ended up with ashes only. Even against the poor foolish king's desire, he remained under the control of his wife. Even though a materialistic person knows he's not enjoying, he's captivated by that. The plans, the continuous, endless, relentless plans of the material energy that engages us in attempts to enjoy. Just like a pet animal that dances to the order of its master. And the final purport. The word vipralabdha is very significant in this verse. V means specifically, pralabdha means obtained. Just to satisfy his desires, the king got the queen, and thus he became cheated by material existence. Although he was not willing to do so, he remained a pet animal under the control of material intelligence. Just as a pet monkey dances according to the desire of his master, the king danced according to the desires of the queen. Bhagavatam 552, it is said, Mahat Sevam Dwaramahor Vamukte. If one associates with a saintly person, a devotee, one's path of liberation becomes clear. But if one associates with a woman or with a person who is too much addicted to a woman, his path of bondage becomes completely clear. In other words, associate with someone for material sense pleasure, and then one gets enwrapped and bound so tightly. On the whole, for spiritual advancement, one must give up the company of women. That is what is meant by the order of sannyas, the renounced order. Before taking sannyas, or completely renouncing the material world, one has to practice avoiding illicit sex. Sex life, licit or illicit, is practically the same thing, the same. Because one is fixed in the mood of, I am the enjoyer, and I will enjoy those things produced of the material world. But through illicit sex, one becomes more and more captivated. And by regulated sex in marriage, one becomes gradually detached. By regulating one's sex life, there's a chance one may eventually be able to renounce sex or renounce the association of women. If this can be done, advancement in spiritual life comes very easily. How one becomes captivated by the association of one's dear wife is explained in this chapter by Narada Muni. Attraction for one's wife means attraction for the material qualities. One who is attracted by the material quality of darkness, ignorance, is in the lowest stage of life, whereas one who is attracted by the material quality of goodness is in a better position, because sattvam sanjayate jnanam, knowledge comes, and detachment. Sometimes we see that when a person is on the platform of material goodness, he is attracted more or less by the cultivation of knowledge. This is, of course, a better position, for knowledge gives one the preference to accept devotional service. Unless one comes to the platform of knowledge, the Brahma-Bhuta stage, one cannot advance in devotional service. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma-Bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakanchati samasaveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate pranam. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. The platform of knowledge is advantageous because it is a means by which one may come to the stage of devotional service. However, if one takes to devotional service directly, knowledge is revealed without separate endeavor. This is confirmed in Bhagavatam 127, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Jnanayadyasu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayarahaitukam. Devotional service automatically reveals actual knowledge of our material existence. One who is sufficiently intelligent immediately attains the stage of renunciation of so-called society, family, and love, as well as other things. As long as we are attached to society, family, and love of the material world, there is no question of knowledge, nor is there a question of devotional service. By directly taking to devotional service, however, one becomes filled with knowledge and renunciation. Knowledge naturally gives renunciation. In this way, one's life becomes successful if one takes to devotional service. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to 4th canto, 25th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Descriptions of the Characteristics of King Paranjan. So on Monday, if Krishna allows, we shall begin the next chapter. 9 texts in the next chapter, according to what is scheduled.
9 texts?
The first 9, 1 through 9. In chapter 26. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam, Gizeh. Oh, Ali Pushpur, did you have?
You spoke about the end of the purport. Which stage of origin is sorry, the Bhagavad Gita. Who says the Bhagavad Gita is in it? It says that Bhagavad Gita is in the pages because we have to read the reason why we have to say that we're not in service. However, it makes the reference of the act of Moses really without separate from them. So it is mostly service.
In other words, without taking to another process. That's what it means by without separate endeavor. In other words, one doesn't have to take to it, because there is a specific process of jnana yoga. Yes. So bhakti, one gets the knowledge that will come by that practice, one gets the renunciation that comes without that practice automatically just by the process of bhakti. Part of the process of bhakti is hearing. This is the main anga, in one sense, of bhakti. So this is how the knowledge comes, by hearing it. And by repeated hearing, and the purification of the bhakti process, one actually can realize. That's... Okay. I can't hear you very well. Because of all the fans in different places, I can't hear you very well. So what do you...
If you want to mix two different analogies, one of these two Rajana,
oh, you mean allegorical stories?
Allegorical stories.
Yes, what's the other one?
The other one is the...
That's not... That's... But that's a different point than that's being made here. That's a different point than that's being made here. And I tried in the class to mention that on more than one time, there's a difference between someone who's getting married so that he can advance in devotional service, because everyone is not pure enough to remain unmarried. So there's a difference between a person whose motive is to get married to advance in devotional service and a person whose motive is dreaming that this life with me as the center, filled with enjoyment, is going to bring pleasure to me, and he's only thinking on the material level. There's a very, very big difference between one, which is called Grihamedi, and Grihastha life. For a devotee, his purpose is ultimately to please Krishna. But he has his limitations, so he's taking this path. Instead of, perhaps it would be better if he could go like this, but he doesn't have that qualification, so he takes this path. But he's going in, but he's aiming towards Krishna with it. So there's a very big difference. Grihastha is also ashram, Prabhupada told me. Because there's such a tendency to think of me as the enjoyer instead of Krishna as the enjoyer. And as soon as one habitually thinks of himself as the center of existence, as the enjoyer, it's difficulty. But what's built into the Grihastha ashram is all the dealings of, you know, that are difficult. And one gets older too, and one can outgrow these things. The demands of the body become less. So one gets purified in a more gradual way, if one wants to take that path under guidance of one's spiritual master and Vaishnavas. It's a legitimate way to go. In the impersonalist school, marriage, you cannot. But in devotional service, it's so powerful that even if one is married, one can be an exalted devotee. And the example is so many of Mahaprabhu's personal associates were Grihastha devotees. I'm not sure of that, but you may have read it, but I'm not sure, but that's not what Prabhupada meant. But if one is thinking I'm a Grihastha and he can try to enjoy in this life, then yes, he's going to not be liberated because he doesn't want to be liberated. He wants to enjoy. But if one wants to serve Krishna sincerely and fully, it's on one level it's the same standard as for anyone. One's attachment has to be to Krishna and one has to be detached from the bodily concept of life. Same standard. So one person is better situated in one ashram, another person in another ashram, depending upon his capacity, his nature, etc. But what is the real question that you want to ask? These are just the one, some philosophical thing to cover up what you're really worried about. You can ask me later. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.